Horse Player Happy Hour is back, people. Going to be on this Thursday starting at 4 p.m. an all Santa Anita lineup. As of this recording on Thursday evening, the game isn't up on horseplayers.com, but probably by the time you're listening to this, it will be, or shortly thereafter. You can go to Horse Players to sign up, and on our social media, Breeders' Cup social media, you can follow along. 4 to 6 p.m., JK going to be with me to start. Then we're going to have Matt Miller come by, help us construct some wagers. All new and improved Horse Players Happy Hour, $20 to play. The house cut goes to charity, and you have three different ways to win a $10,000 Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seat. We'll tell you all about the format. We're starting now. We're going for the next 20 weeks or so, right through the Breeders' Cup. We want you to join us. Go to horseplayers.com to sign up for Horse Player Happy Hour today, and make sure to check us out on the live stream Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. Hello and welcome to a special edition of the In the Money Players Podcast. This is our Belmont Stakes Racing Festival at Saratoga recap, our show for Monday, June 10th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornatel, back from Saratoga and down in the Brooklyn Bunker. We're going to do that thing where we do a simulcast. Sometimes our content is just on YouTube. Sometimes it's just on audio. This one is going to go out on both. And with that in mind, we'll thank everybody out there for helping us on YouTube to get over 9,000 subscribers. Very happy for that. But we're not done yet, folks. The next target, 10,000. Go ahead, sign up to receive notifications and subscribe to the YouTube channel. You'll help us get there. We appreciate you. It was great walking around Saratoga and having so many people come up and say, hey, PTF, great to see you. And I subscribe. They know the way to my heart. Very, very good stuff. Joining me for this first segment on the show is the usual co-host. He has left Saratoga as well. He is down on the planet Texas. He's finishing his lunch. He's Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, JK?
Yeah. Look, I left. I had to fly to Texas this morning, which is Monday morning. So I got off of air. The last race was at 6:48. I got off air at 7:01. I had Joe Venina pull into the main gate and turn the car around so that we didn't get stuck in traffic. I sprinted after I got off of air. Greg Wolf wasn't even done doing his rollout. And I was in the car heading down 87 back to Manhattan before getting up this morning to fly to Austin.
Pretty funny. Let's get in to this Belmont Stakes Racing Festival at Saratoga. First, let's start with just a general question. What did you think of this big race being up there? There was a lot of anticipation. There was a lot of excitement. There were some people questioning it. Where did you land on the whole Belmont Stakes Racing Festival at Saratoga?
So often in life, things get hyped up. You go to them. And you wake up and you're like, oh, God, that was too much. That wasn't even, it's stupid. This is boring. I thought it lived up to the hype and more. I thought it was outstanding. Now, look, I didn't really get to consume it fully as a fan, which is so busy, but I did watch a lot of people consume it. I saw as much as I could, and it looked to be tremendous. I thought it was outstanding. And I think that the handle numbers that took place really kind of illustrate that.
Between the handle numbers and my general understanding of New York City construction projects, it would not surprise me one bit, JK, if rather than have one extra year up at Saratoga of this Belmont Stakes Racing Festival, if there's some world in which they decide it's better for everybody involved for it to go on another year. I was out in the crowd for the whole thing. And I just thought it was fantastic. You know, we were at the seats mainly in the top of the stretch, but I was in the clubhouse. I liked the renovations generally. Thought the team at NYRA did an excellent job. And you know what? Also, the weather, which was predicted to be so rotten, I think realistically we got away with about as good weather as we could as far as that goes. I was a big fan. I agree. We lived up to the hype. Let's start our analysis by taking a look at the big race itself. Showing a view here from a DRF formulator of the buyer speed figure chart view. You can see there the horse that got the job done, which you already knew, unless you've been living under a rock. Dornock was successful. Mind Frame, a horse that both you and I respected a lot, getting into second. And our old friend, Sierra Leone, clocking in third in the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival. What for you was the headline here?
I mean, obviously the headline has to go to Dornick winning, right? And I think that, you know, I was very pleased with Jason Wirth's speech. You know, he owned 10% of the horse. I was very pleased with his speech that he gave on Fox, and he also gave in the press conference where he continued to say that, you know, racing is the best, most underrated sport out there. And I think when other people, fans of other sports, hear someone that they were a fan of say that, I think it's great publicity for us. And you know, obviously that helps. So I was happy for them in that regard, Randy Hill as well. But, you know, I think all three winners of these Triple Crown races were fortunate in doing so. And I think if you, when looking at the chart, I don't really have a lot to say. I think it just kind of is what it is. Dornick was forward. He got a nice trip. Mindframe was probably best if he doesn't take a right-hand turn when Irad catches him the second time with the left-handed stick. Sierra Leone is doing what Sierra Leone does, which is trying to turn left instead of running straight and eventually costing him some ground. And I do think the racetrack probably wasn't friendly to him, but I don't think he was winning regardless of the racetrack based on the way the other two horses ran. Honor Marie, I think, is going to be a pluggy horse. It's going to always run like third and fourth in these types of races. Resilience probably wants to go a little bit shorter. I mean, Mystic Dan, I think he is who I thought he was, which is a good horse that won the Kentucky Derby, but not talented enough to overcome adversity or to overcome a not ideal situation for him. Seize the Gray, I think last time was the time. There's not a whole lot to grab out of this, right? I mean, I think that this Triple Crown left us a little bit empty on who's the best three-year-old. I mean, I guess it's Mystic Dan at this point. Who would win? If you had to, like, give away the trophy from the place with the other letters, I suppose it would be Mystic Dan at this point. But that doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy. So I think the rest of the summer is gonna say a lot about this division.
And there's a lot to happen between now and then. But yeah, you're right. We did another video on the top five. We're going to pop the audio later in the podcast if you're listening on that side. But if you think about it in terms of year-end awards, the little bit of extra credit that the Derby gets finishing in the money in two races, you can really make a Mystic Dan case. I mean, yeah, if the season ended today, he would be the three-year-old champion. Couple of points, though, I want to follow up on. You left a little bit of meat on the bone. You mentioned the racetrack casually. We talked off air. We're doing this very early. We don't have racingflow.com numbers, haven't really touched base with any of our pro punter friends. I thought the track was kind to speed plus, I'd say. It wasn't a bias to me where, oh my God, it was absolutely dictating the outcome of races, but I think it did play a factor in what we saw in the Belmont Stakes itself, where I did feel like Sierra Leone was a little up against it. Doubtless he did what you said. He still lugged new equipment and all a little bit, but I think that between the way the pace played out there with it being honest but not crazy and sort of tempering a little bit in the latter half of the race and the way the track was playing, I did think it gave him a little bit of a disadvantage. Where are you with how the track was playing for this Belmont Stakes?
You know, I'm not one to get overly throwing around bias things without significant proof, right? And I think the main thing that I need is for bad horses to win races based on where they were on the racetrack, or at least to start to feel that way. General Partner was always winning the first race. Subrogate and Looms Boldly, nice horses that were forward. I don't have a problem there. Randomized and Idiomatic, fine. Baby Yoda ran like a 197 buyer one time at Saratoga on the men. So I didn't necessarily have a problem with his run. Croupy did come from way out of it, right? Came from out of it at 5-2 and won. So there's no, you know, there's no bias hurting there. Bookham Dano came from off of it, did have a lot of pace to close into, but did come from off of it. You know, he's not some sort of like over the top superstar that he's supposed to overcome some crazy speed bias. National Treasure won the damn Pegasus and the Preakness. So why is it weird that Bob Baffert came in and went wire to wire grade one in New York? I don't know. I mean, sure. Maybe all dirt racing is favors horses that are forward. So I think it was more that than anything else.
Mindframe, I made this point in the other video, but I'll make it quickly here as well. And for the podcast, I heard some people say, oh, I'm not sure he was ever going by. He was going by. I mean, where I was sitting, sort of top of the stretch, you see all the momentum. On the other video, I said 19 out of 20. I think that's about right. 19 out of 20 times the horse with the momentum that he had. I mean, and not only that, I mean, he did go by. He stuck his head in front doing, you know, doing what he did, which was to watch this replay. This isn't even three or four paths. It's six or eight that he ends up drifting by failing to run in a straight line. I do think there was something to the point of the people who said, maybe this is too much too soon. Maybe the inexperience tells on him going the mile and a quarter in only his third start. I think that's absolutely fair after the fact. I don't feel bad for ending up using him pretty heavily on the tickets on that. And I think he might have the best future of all of these horses, just based on the brilliance he showed to date and, to my mind, the excuse that he has here.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, he's the one I want moving forward, you know, for certain, based on that performance. And yeah, I mean, I said before that experience isn't going to matter for him unless experience matters for him, you know, and he got a great trip. And then it just that one left-handed crop caught him off guard. And I think ultimately that's what cost him.
Let's talk about some of the other performances that really impressed you, JK. I'll just throw it to you completely open. I think I have a suspicion of where you're going to go with this. What were some of the most impressive performances you saw throughout the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, National Treasure was outstanding. I thought White Abario was terrible. And since been a trainer change, back to Safi Joseph, which you don't see that very often, a Breeders' Cup Classic winner being moved back to the original trainer. But I thought National Treasure was sensational, and I look forward to seeing him probably run back in the Whitney. You know, he's got a Preakness under his belt, so there's not going to be any issues or questions about his distance. So I thought he was really good. You know, I thought Torpedo Anna, which we can touch on quickly, was really damn good on Friday, but she's not brilliant yet. I mean, she's running good races, and she's running fast numbers, and she's definitely the leader in the clubhouse for three-year-old champion, and she looks like a horse that maybe in the fall can compete with a Randomized and an Idiomatic. But, you know, you got to be special, special, special to start this conversation about running against the boys. I just don't necessarily need her in that regard yet. And then the one that really stands out to me, and I know that turf sprinting in this country gets a little bit kind of overlooked or kind of passed to the side, but Cogburn was sensational. I mean, sensational. 111 buyer speed figure, if I'm not mistaken, broke the North American track record for 5.5 furlongs. Steve Asmussen saying he never thought he'd ever see a horse run under a minute going 5.5, and he did that. So he was sensational. And those are some of the ones that really stuck out to me.
Yeah, I mean, you hit most of the notes that I was gonna absolutely mention. If you didn't, showing some buyer speed figures up there, it was a 102 for National Treasure. So nothing that great, nothing to make you think, oh, here's your Breeders' Cup Classic winner, but certainly a game and good performance. Getting back to the bias, funny enough, I feel like I can speak on this. I think the horse that really gave me that idea was how well my namesake Looms Boldly ran. I mean, this was his previous top was an 86, went all the way up to 99. Horse ran great, don't get me wrong, but I did get the sneaking suspicion we might have been carried by the racetrack a little bit. Really glad you mentioned Cogburn. We made very strong cases for him on the preview show. Matt Kater actually reached out to me afterwards and said he wanted to make that, and we'll do this officially on a show later in the week, but we'll shout out our friends at Adelphi Racing here and say we'll give a preview that Cogburn is going to be the Adelphi Racing performance of the week with that 111 fired speed figure. It was an exciting 2 days of racing. Let's pause on the Acorn for a minute, though, Jonathan, because I do think, I mean, you've tipped your hand about how you feel, but I have to say, heading in on this day, I went in thinking, I want to see this Torpedo Anna do it one more time. I thought she might have been a little bit flattered by the racetrack the last time. I was interested in Just FYI to turn the tables, mainly because I liked her last time and like wanted to see the form confirmed. Not only was the form confirmed, I mean, this turned into a mockery. I mean, just FYI kind of couldn't have been worse. But that aside, Torpedo Anna getting that 99 buyer speed figure and getting the job done in scintillating fashion. I can see where Kenny's coming from with these ideas. Given how the racing calendar shakes out, I don't think he needs to be in a hurry to run her against the boys like straight away or anything. But it's not the nuttiest idea I've ever heard. And I'll put it this way. It makes a lot more sense after Friday than it did going in.
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't care who was in any of these races. If like Rachel was in there, right? You know, I mean, like that. I'd run her against, you know, American Pharaoh, whatever. And Justify. But as far as like is if this group that we have right now, the Sierra Leones, the Door Knocks, the Mystic Dans, the Seize the Grays, If those horses show up in the Travers, yeah, run this filly. But if the mind frame that could be shows up, or the Muth that could be shows up, or the Fierceness that could be shows up, or all three of them show up, run the Alabama, sweetheart. Like that, you don't want. I don't think she wants those horses.
Yeah.
But I do think she wants the ones that won all the Triple Crown races. I think she would beat all of them. But I don't think she wants what could be. I don't think she wants those late summer types like Arrogate. I don't think she wants those horses. So that's kind of the point I'm making.
I think that's fair.
I just think they want to tread lightly there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, it was certainly a more visually, now, you know, numbers, we use numbers for a reason, but visually it was a more impressive win in the Acorn than what any of the colts did in the Triple Crown races, true or false.
Absolutely true, but I do want to say one other thing about the Acorn, and then I do want to talk about the Manhattan.
That was next on my list.
Just FYI, more trainers and riders need to do what they tried to do with her, which is put her on the front end. You have a classy two-year-old champion and let her get comfortable on the front end and put the screws to a horse like Torpedo Anna. It didn't work, but I don't think you should be results oriented in that opinion. Like that was the right move for her. Cause if she was behind her, she was never going to run by her either. So I like the fact that they tried to do that.
Yeah. I don't mind that idea in terms of we're very critical of riders for being too passive in the history of the In the Money Players podcast. So, right, I don't want to be speaking out of both sides of my mouth and say, oh, the tactics were bad. I just thought the performance was bad. That's where I was going with that. I didn't have an issue. It's not like I was cussing when they decided to go to the lead or anything. You mentioned the Manhattan. It was won by measured time. Charlie Appleby, he'd had some horses run well, but he hadn't had that big, impressive winner at the festival that we're used to from him in the same way. And he'd had some dreadful underperformances, I think, of Siskiny back on Thursday in the Gold Cup. There were some questions about the form of the yard coming in. Measured Time said, let me take it from here, boss. 104, buyer speed figure, very impressive. Race came back fast. I mean, it looks a little odd even to have a race where you have five horses who all hit the 100 buyer speed figure threshold, and I'll pull that up for those of you watching on YouTube as we're chatting, so you can see exactly what I mean. But this was a terrific effort for Measure Time, who I was surprised was as good a price as he was. Maybe that the barn not flying was part of the reason it worked out like that. But very, very good stuff, and fair enough to see Appleby getting his win on the big day. What was it about this race that you wanted to chat about?
Well, there's two things about Measure Time. I love when these Europeans come over here. Reminds me of course, I'm going to do this, Highland Real. When Highland they come Real out there and they find themselves on the front end, or they find themselves forward, and you know they got that stamina, they're dangerous racehorses when they come over here like this. And for Measured Time, there's a couple of things. One, he ran a 104 buyer, I believe, and if I'm not mistaken, that is the fastest turf race so far this year in this country, which is saying a lot. But the other thing about Measured Time is in the post-race interview when Maggie was on horseback with William Buick, he said that this horse was like a monster galloper. And I'm filing that away for the Breeders' Cup, because we so often are trying to identify horses that have a real weapon in their stamina. And if there ends up being a situation where there's not a lot of pace in that race, Charlie Appleby and William Buick, I think, will have a plan to be very, very aggressive on that firm turf at Del Mar and try to run them off their feet a la Highland Real. And I wanted to be sure to point that out and remember that. At Measure Time is going to be hard to beat in this country if he's going to run races like he did last time.
And with Appleby having the string here now and being, you know you're going to see him. A horse who's proven that he likes these conditions. You know we're going to be seeing him again. Ended up going 1-2 there with the Euros with Measure Time and Nation's Pride. We just got about a minute left, JK. Any further races you wanted to address from this racing festival? God knows we could do more time on it, but we're short on it at the moment.
No, it's fine. I want to point out General Partner, who let's not forget, he was a horse that was very part of that, best juvenile we've seen in a long time with Muth, Timberlake, him, Fierceness. And he came back and was impressive in that race on opening race on Saturday. Ways and Means was sensational. I think she got a big number when she came back. I don't know what it was. It was on Friday.
Peace Day.
It was early Friday. It could have been early Friday.
Early Friday. So I'll because Marshall and Clay's horse, Almost Gone Rocket, was outstanding. And she is going to probably be in the test with a horse like Ways and Means. That race is looking like it's going to be an absolute war. And so, look, I mean, these big days provide big undercard opportunities to find some really cool horses that can go on to do cool stuff as well.
That was going to be my close. You stole my thunder. I was going to give credit to Clay Sanders and that filly who absolutely ran a huge race on Thursday. That one came back as a 99 buyer speed figure. They briefly, I noticed, posted it as a 93, or at least I think I saw that it was at first posted as a 93, ended up upgrading it all the way to the 99. She's going to fit in very, very well in that test stakes and getting a chance to hang out with Clay and Marshall and some other members of the 10 strike team. That was definitely amongst the high points for me. I am struggling to find Ways and Means figure, Jonathan, but I feel like we can't.
No, we're gonna find it. It's I'm gonna find it right here. Time Form US has a nice easy way to kind of get from race to race. I think it was the sixth or the seventh. That was Money's Gold was the seventh.
No, it was on Thursday. It was a 104 buyer speed figure that she ran. So boy, we have some fast horses who are going to be pointed to that race.
Well, she messed me up a little bit because I think I said that she must have ran later because Almost Gone Rocket ran, and I said, "Oh, I think we just saw the favorite for the test."
Not so fast. But, I mean, hey, I don't think though, as good as Almost Gone Rocket looked. You're not going to be shying away from anybody, but that is a monster number. From Ways and Means. But yeah, congrats to all connections. Nice to see Ways and Means, who looked like such a superstar, come back and basically justify that opinion that we all had after the first race. Great stuff. Closing thought from you, JK.
Rajiv had a good line about Almost Gone Rocket on the show. He said they need to drop the almost because she was definitely gone.
That's very good. That was great having him, by the way, as part of our pre-coverage on the YouTube channel. If you missed that, folks, and you're a podcast person hearing this, we do plenty of YouTube exclusive stuff. So go onto that YouTube channel. Please subscribe. Get us up to that $10,000 number. $10,000, just $10,000 number. No dollars about it. As JK pointed out, if everybody watching the video just went and did it, we'd be at $20,000 in no time. So let's help us out. We appreciate it. Click the notification bell so you don't miss any of that YouTube exclusive content. We're going to be back with more show if you're listening on the podcast side. And if you're watching on YouTube, we're going to see you very soon. We're proud to be partnered with the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Purses in Kentucky are powered by the KTDF and have led to an incredible enhancement to the Kentucky racing scene. KTDF dollars in purses are only for Kentucky bred horses, so breeding in Kentucky is the best way to maximize profits and return on racing and breeding investments. Because of the benefits from the KTDF, Churchill Downs and the Kentucky racing circuit as a whole continue to be on an incredible upward trajectory. For more information, please check out inthemoneypodcast.com/KTDF. Today's show also brought to you by our friends over at Hawthorne. So happy to be partnered with them for this 2024 season. Large field sizes, including great turf racing, are back in action this summer at Chicago's hometown track. With a 12% takeout on win place and show wagers, Hawthorne has been quietly and consistently producing great cards, and horse players are really starting to take notice. Be sure to check out Hawthorne this summer and take advantage of a great racing product at a great price. For more information, be sure to check out inthemoneypodcast.com/Hawthorne and check out our coverage of Hawthorne on the late week In the Money Players podcast. This is our Triple Crown, post-Triple Crown, top five video regarding these three-year-olds we've been following so closely all year on this YouTube channel. PTF and JK back with you. Let's just start off, JK, with the Triple Crown now in the rearview mirror. How are you feeling? Are you feeling the burn of the three races in 5 weeks? Are you ready to keep rocking and rolling here?
Yeah, me and Mystic Dan need a little time off. Look, it was a lot of fun. No superstars. No one really grabbed me and is going to get tattooed on this other arm by any means. But I do think it was a lot of fun. It's some great stories. Mystic Dan and Kenny and Brian and the success that they had, including someone we might talk about here in a few minutes. And then to see the coach, Dwayne Lucas, and have that opportunity to sit down and do cart talk with him. And then the Jason Wirth speech after he won with Dornick I thought was outstanding. What he said on Fox with that big audience of baseball fans watching right before the Yankees and the Dodgers, where he said it's the most underrated sport in the world, bar none. And then basically said that winning the Belmont was like winning the World Series.
Great stuff indeed. We're going to have a much longer conversation. You can find it elsewhere on our YouTube channel, recapping the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival at a bit more length. We're doing the top five now, though. I do want to put a shout out. Thank you so much to everybody out there who got us over the 9,000 subscriber hump. Next goal in the mirror here, or dead ahead of us. We want to get to that 10,000. We want to get that creator award. If you can help us out by subscribing, click that notification bell so you don't miss any of our exclusive YouTube content. But I was really pleased with all the lively conversation we had going in the comments and with the way that the listeners showed up for us, JK.
If you're watching this video right now, just click, I think it's here. I don't know. The cameras confuse me. I don't know which side's which. Right here is like a button somewhere. Click that. And if everyone watching this video does it, we'll be at 10,000 before the end of the day. So just help us out if you can.
We love it. Let's get into this top five. You've already teased the horse that we're going to put at number five. Every Triple Crown race is special. The Derby certainly holds a special place. A horse that can run in the money, two out of three, has to be on our top five three-year-old post-Triple Crown list. That horse is Mystic Dan, kind of a no-show in the Belmont. Ben Kudla on one of our shows made the observation that perhaps it was a question of load management for these horses coming back three times in 5 weeks, to borrow the NBA term. But I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about it. Mystic Dan certainly still belongs on this list and might have some valuable prizes next to his name as the year goes on.
Yeah, look, it's the Kentucky Derby. You're going to go down in history. There's nothing we can do or say that's going to change the fact that he's a Derby winner. But I will say this. I had heard from a number of people who have great opinions that Mystic Dan was the best training horse leading up to the Belmont Stakes, and the fact that he ran like that. I think what I always thought about him is true. He's good, but he needs everything to work out perfectly for him and not perfectly for everyone else in order for him to win a caliber of race like this. He deserves to be in this top five as the Derby winner. I don't need him much moving forward.
Let's go to his stablemate. This is an interesting one, JK. If we were just judging on our eyes and our eyes alone, this horse, many would tell us, is too low, I think, on this list. I'm talking about Thorpedo Anna, who came back and just ran an absolute blinder of a race in the Acorn following up that Kentucky Oaks success. After the Kentucky Oaks, I said, I want to see her do it one more time before I'm ready to put her up with the best of her generation, not just amongst her own sex. She put together that kind of performance in this year's Acorn Stakes. And I think, you know, Kenny McPeak loves to talk about running fillies against the boys. He's done so successfully in the past. You don't have to go too far back in the future to see that. Thorpedo Anna, at this point, she might just deserve her chance. Am I overrating her? Or do you think she deserves to be number four on this list?
Yeah, sure. I think she deserves to be number four on this list because we've talked about it. It's a little bit of a lighter group. When you have three different winners of all three races, it suggests that. I have no problem with the idea. Look, I have Rachel Alexandra tattooed on my arm in Zenyatta, so the fillies against the boys is definitely not something I'm allergic to. But I will say this. Rachel was brilliant. Brilliant. Thorpedo Anna's not brilliant. She's just really damn good. And I think that she's going to need to kind of work her way into the brilliant category in order for me to see it warranted for her to run against the boys. Or if no one emerges over the next 6 to 7 weeks, 8 weeks leading into the summer, right, and you don't get a horse like Muth to come back and run well in the Haskell, or Fierceness to come back and run well in the Haskell, or Mind Frame or something of those of that nature, yeah, sure, give her a shot. If one of those horses shows up, coming in off a triple-digit buyer, I think she's better served to run in the Coaching Club American Oaks and the Alabama, because there's nothing wrong with those two races.
Nothing at all. It would be worth an awful lot for her future value. But really, that was a star performance, and I wanted to make sure that we highlight it. Let's get to number three. This is the one that if you told us both before the weekend this horse was going to end up in the middle of our top five, in the hinge spot, number three, I think we both would have said, really? Maybe if I really squint, I can see Dornock. But hey, this is a Belmont Stakes winner, and he's a Belmont Stakes winner. And we said this before the race, it's not pure redboarding that had excuses. I thought trainer Danny Gargan's quote was very shrewd after the race. He said that the post, the one post got him beat in the Kentucky Derby. Impossible draw down there. Miserable trip. You can toss that out. And he fell on his sword. He said, I got him beat in the Bluegrass Stakes with that failed rating experiment. There was always this possibility that he had more than he'd shown in those last two races. He showed that on Saturday. I have some questions about the performance, maybe being flattered by a couple of things. We'll talk about that more on the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival YouTube channel. But I'm comfortable with one of the Triple Crown winners with excuses for the last two races being on this list. What do you think about Dornoch?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be too results-oriented, right? I think he got a perfect setup in that situation. If Mindframe doesn't duck from the left-handed stick, he's probably the Belmont Stakes winner. And look, he just never really did much as a three-year-old to make me believe that that performance was something that he could show. I think it was right place, right time, very similar to what we saw with Seize the Gray and very similar to what we saw with Mystic Dam. I'm not going to be cutting in line to bet Dornoch moving forward. Deserves to be on the list as the winner of the Belmont Stakes, but he's not on my list of horses I'm looking forward to betting this summer.
There is a reason why we will now be talking about some horses that finished behind Dornoch in the Belmont Stakes. Let's get to the one you mentioned, JK, Mindframe. So let me give you my perspective in the race. I'm sitting in the stretch seats on the second floor at Saratoga. You know what that means. You see all the momentum. You really know who's going to win, unless it's a track deeply tilted to closers. Then sometimes there can be a bit of an optical illusion. But on this track, which was at the very least kind to speed, if not out and out biased towards speed, I was super confident in identifying the winner in front of me. The winner of the race in front of me, 9 out of 10, maybe more like 19 out of 20, was Mindframe. He had all the momentum. I'm telling you, he was going to go right by until the little act of deciding not to be able to run straight. For a horse in only his third start, you know, we talked about this. You made the case he was the one who'd shown the most brilliance of this field. The haters, not necessarily the haters, but the people on the other side of the argument said, yeah, but he's only got two starts. Is that inexperience going to tell on him? I think the inexperience told on him, or we'd have had a different winner of the Belmont Stakes. But I'm super comfortable putting him here in the number two spot on our top five going forward. And if that's the wrong answer, he's probably too low.
How funny it's going to be if him and another horse wearing blue and orange silks end up both trending in the right direction in the Travers. That'll be an exciting week. I ran into Mike Rapoli right after the race, and he was very bummed out, more than I've ever seen him. He usually takes beats like that a little bit, like with his, you know, a little bit more, you know, with his chest out a little bit more. But he was a little bit beat up. So I think that it was an opportunity for him to kind of really feel like, I told you this horse was good. And he was being, I think, responding to some criticism of running the horse back so short. Very simple. I said, what did Irad say? And he said, Irad said, I hit him left-handed and he gave me absolutely nothing. I hit him left-handed again and he bolted to the outside rail. Once I straightened him up, he started to run again, but at that point it was too late.
The horse was out of the barn, as it were. Let's hit a couple of quick honorable mentions here. You've mentioned a couple of these horses. Speaking of brilliance, because of the fact that we haven't seen them on the racetrack, we weren't comfortable putting Fierceness or Muth in the actual top five. From a pure talent point of view, you could accuse me of a host fail for that one if you wanted to. But I know these were two horses you wanted to talk about, at least briefly, before we get to our number one.
Yeah, well, I think Muth and Fierceness will both show up in the Preakness. And I think if one of those horses does what I think a lot of people have always thought they were capable of doing, they thrust themselves right into this top five. So we'll have an updated top five probably after the Haskell. We'll preview that Haskell as part of our three-year-old journey that we've been on with you guys here. And then we'll try to see where it all lays. See the Gray probably also deserves to be an honorable mention. You win the Preakness, you deserve a call out. Like I said, I think all three winners of this Triple Crown were advantageous in their setups for those wins. But hey, they can't take the trophy from them now.
That's right. I'm glad you mentioned Seize the Gray. Great story. Our friends over at My Racehorse, and a horse that ran so well on the Derby undercard and then, you know, went out like a light here on Belmont Stakes Day. But again, that load management idea, three races in 5 weeks, it's a lot, folks. And it may have told on him a little bit in the end. Still an interesting horse to see down the line. Number one on the list. This may surprise some people, but I feel good about it, JK. Sierra Leone. He ends up in the money. He still didn't exactly run straight in the lane. But here's the number one reason for me why I'm comfortable with him at the number one spot. I do think this was a track tilted towards speed on the day. I think as tamely away as Seize the Gray went, the pace didn't heat up as much as I thought it was going to. I think smart tactics from Mindframe. Had he run straight, he would have won. But I also thought he might be more keen and aggressive early. So what I'm saying is, I don't think Sierra Leone got the setup we thought he was going to have. I don't think he got the racetrack he was going to have. Maybe some people are tired of the not running straight in the lane act. But honestly, going forward, I'm pretty comfortable identifying him as the three-year-old I think is still capable of maybe doing the best things in terms of what he's shown us on the racetrack. What do you think about Sierra Leone in this top spot?
Yeah, I mean, look, it feels weird putting him there, just considering, you know, he didn't win any of these races. But right. he was an inch away from winning the Derby. You know, he skipped the Preakness, and I thought that he ran considerably well considering the circumstances of the racetrack and his antics. I feel like his antics will get resolved. You know, the cage bit was used last time for the first time, and he still got in pretty heavily. But I would think that at some point they're going to get that resolved. They've got a little bit more time now to work on it, right? I mean, they didn't have much time between the Derby and now to kind of get used to that situation. Now they have some time. I think I'd imagine he'll either point all the way to the Travers or at least the Jim Dandy as kind of a comeback. And I think maybe even the Jim Dandy, they can experiment. How about just glue this guy to the rail? Then he can't go left. I do think that he has the most upside because he just won't get out of his own way. From these horses we've talked about. I mean, I'm obviously a big fan of Mindframe, but I think he deserves to be number one here and look forward to seeing where he goes the rest of the summer.
Look, we picked the top five. You can hear from how we talk about it. We're not super confident about it. Give us your top five or give us your number one. That's actually easier. Give us your number one in the comments. Who would you have put at the top of the list for these three-year-olds going forward? When we look back at this season, who's going to have the most impressive resume? We'd love to hear from you. We would love you to help us in our goal of getting to 10,000 subs on YouTube. Please subscribe, click the notification bell, and tell your friends as well. We're trying to create a little community here and over on our podcast network. Also, make sure you subscribe to In the Money Media, wherever you get your podcasts, In the Money Players podcast. That's probably the easiest way to find it. We're going to have a ton of special content this weekend for our friends over at Monmouth Park. It's Haskell Preview Day, and there's also going to be a contest, a free contest, essentially. You pay a dollar, but it gets credited back to your account. Opportunity to win into the Haskell Day contest. There'll be a live stream covering that as well, so you can look for that on our social media. And make sure you go over to horseturnies.com to sign up for the Haskell Preview Day contest from our friends at Monmouth Park. That's going to do it for today's show. I want to thank JK for coming on board and all the sponsors you heard from earlier in the show, including KTDF, Monmouth Park, Hawthorne, and our friends at the Breeders' Cup, vis-a-vis Horse Player Happy Hour. We really want you to join us for that. We want to make this fifth year of Horse Player Happy Hour the biggest one yet. Let's thank our founding partners. So great to get to hang out with so many folks in the 10 Strike Racing crew, especially Clay Sanders and Marshall Graham. Awesome to have them up in Saratoga. Clay's so hardcore, he was just in town for about 4 hours to watch that filly. He was not disappointed that he made the trip. Excited to see more from her as the year goes on. Also had an opportunity to finally visit Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga. What a great facility. Kim Weir seems so happy in her new gig. We got a little bit of a walk around there on Sunday morning to see the work they do, helping humans and helping horses. We want you to support their excellent cause in a generous way. We'll be diverting some of our Horse Player Happy Hour money to them from this year. You can also learn more about their mission and donate directly at inthemoneypodcast.com/horses. Thanks, though, most of all, to all of you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do, especially everybody who came up and said hi at Saratoga. That was tickled. Met more listeners and viewers than ever before wandering around there at Saratoga Racecourse. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos!